On the 16th of January every year, disciples of Venerable Ajahn Chah gather at Wat Nong Pa Pong from within the country and abroad. They gather together, the monks number in the thousand, and the lay people are also many thousands gathering together. It is tangible, it is ceremonial. There is the recitation of words of homage to the Venerable Ajahn Chah. And the lay people prepare flowers, incense, and candles to offer to the monastic Sangha. The monastic Sangha then hold those flowers, incense, and candles and proceed to circumambulate the stupa, the chedi, which enshrines the relics of Venerable Ajahn Chah. One can see that this is tangible, and within it we can see the Sangha who are the disciples, those who uphold the 227 precepts, or even the little novice monks all walk with reverence. All the lay people also gather together in homage, with a quality of harmony and unity, which is also a form of Dhamma practice. The image that is seen is deeply impressive, filling the heart. Knowing that every mind that comes here is not forced to or recruited, but comes willingly from the heart. They set their intention from the previous year, continuing into this year and into the years to come. Having come there, the heart is filled, the heart is joyful. Because seeing a samana, a renunciant, is a blessing of one's life, and paying homage is the highest blessing of life. This is giving homage to those worthy of homage, namely the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha. Even if the homage is made through material offerings, flowers, incense, candles, or through ceremonial acts of recitation and offering, yet it is a heartening and uplifting image, being the continuation of the life of the Buddha's dispensation. People from both near and far, upon seeing it, feel gladdened. At times there are many groups who do not come, but who have come before, who have come to practice there before, who have come and practiced without sleeping the whole night, coming to listen to the Dhamma, coming to practice the Dhamma throughout the night. When the year comes, no matter which country they are in, they still practice the Dhamma throughout the night again, without sleeping again, recollecting on this day, the day when the great teacher passed away. They then set their intention to make offerings, both with flowers, incense, and candles, and with the practice of bhavana, meditation. Here we must ask ourselves, have we made the homage correctly? Have we given our practice in homage? This homage through our practice is considered the highest form of homage, because flowers, incense, and candles are external acts of homage, which many people are able to do. But to bring the heart to give homage through giving one's practice in accordance with the teachings, that is even more difficult. To give this homage is meritorious, but to truly gain wholesomeness and skillfulness, we must come to train further. If it's only the ceremony alone, it doesn't take long, just about 1 hour and it's finished. Within that ceremony, our minds may fabricate all kinds of things as well. But if we come to give our practice in homage, then we must come to restrain the mind. We must have forbearance. For what purpose? It is to enter into teachings that are deeper, to enter into the core of the teachings of the perfectly self-awakened Buddha, of the great enlightened teachers who have taught us to practice. That is important, because the Buddha himself had already declared that venerating the Tathagata with flowers and various fragrances is not what the Buddha delights in. He delights when we practice as homage to him. because the Buddha seeks benefit for us alone. It does not seek for us to venerate him at all. He wants us to give homage through our practice, so that we may have Dhamma in our hearts, enabling us to be freed from suffering. This is the highest form of homage. We must therefore endure the moods, emotions, and sense objects that enter, not to follow our mind's inclinations. We must strive to train in mindfulness. Because the great teachers, Venerable Ajahn Chah, they taught that if we follow our mind's inclinations, we follow our moods and sense objects. If the mind follows the moods, then there is only suffering. So we must be careful not to follow our moods. We must resist. We must endure and restrain, which can be called a matter of sila, moral conduct. To practice meditation, to cultivate mindfulness, it must then be undertaken with even greater effort, higher than before. If we can endure more often, such as in sitting meditation, enduring, at the very beginning, the mind is restless and irritated. Being able to sit for 5 minutes is already very good. The mind wanders and is agitated in all kinds of ways, because throughout our lives, whether 20 years, 30 years, or 40 years, we have never sat still and observed our own mind. When we come to sit still and observe the mind, we see it. Oh my, it thinks so very much, endlessly proliferating, spinning round and round. When we see the harm in this, then we must come to train. We train in mindfulness, develop concentration so that it becomes stable, and then it will gradually improve. At first, one sits for 5 minutes, thinking it has been 50 minutes already. One then tries to endure, tries to keep practicing. By doing it frequently, sitting for 50 minutes, then the mind becomes light, the body becomes light, as if one has not been sitting for long at all. Sitting for 2 hours feels like sitting for only 10 minutes even. The mind becomes light, the body becomes light, the heart feels light. It calms the thoughts, restlessness and irritation, those things that make our mind gloomy, the things that obstruct and block our mind. That is, the mind that fabricates in delight and pleasure in forms, in sounds, in smells, tastes, tactile sensations, and all mental objects. The angry mind, the mind that harbors ill will, the mind that becomes drowsy and sleepy, the restless and irritated mind, the frustrated mind, or the doubting mind, all sorts of these. Holding ill will towards others, holding ill will towards oneself, all of this makes our mind gloomy. We must therefore come to restrain the mind, reflecting that life is uncertain. Soon we will have to die. Why be restless and irritated? Why fabricate? Why be greedy, angry, and deluded? And then the mind becomes calm. Spreading metta, loving kindness. It's better to have love for one another, to have kindness, to have forgiveness towards one another, and then to practice meditation, to cultivate mindfulness. When we can recollect the virtues of the Buddha and cultivate mindfulness, it causes our mind to become more peaceful. So this begins from first seeing the harm and danger of the turmoil in the mind, seeing the benefit of seeking great teachers. Until we could meet with Venerable Ajahn Chah, to meet with the Dhamma of Ajahn Chah that he had learnt from the great teachers, Venerable Ajahn Mun, Venerable Ajahn Ginari, Venerable Ajahn Tongrat. And then Ajahn Chah brought those teachings to teach us, transmitting those various fields of knowledge to us. Even though they have passed away, the Dhamma that they taught still remains. Even though later generations did not meet Ajahn Chah, they meet his Dhamma and bring it to practice. By bringing it into practice, we too then are his disciples. The monastic Sangha who gather together and the many lay people who gather together, only a small portion had the opportunity to meet and pay respects to Ajahn Chah. The majority may not have met him, but they meet him in the Dhamma. For those who met him but did not meet the Dhamma, they are as if they didn't meet him at all. It is merit, but that wholesomeness is very small. But what about those who come to practice the Dhamma? Even if they did not meet Ajahn Chah in person while he was alive, but they practice the Dhamma. Do you see? The mind is joyful, practicing according to him, according to what Ajahn Chah taught, taking the Dhamma that he taught, bringing it to teach, bringing it to practice. This can make our mind calm, pure and liberated as well. It can see the Dhamma as well. Even though one practices while doubting in many ways, still, in the end, one reaches the core of the Dhamma. So Ajahn Chah taught that we should not cling to things, nor cling to persons. He taught us to let go, to let go, to have wisdom, to contemplate and then let go, because this letting go can resolve the suffering in the heart. This accords with the teachings of the Buddha, who taught us to clearly know and truly see both material and mental phenomena, that they are things that arise, remain, then cease. This Dhamma, therefore, is the tool that enables us to be freed from suffering. So let us look at how Venerable Ajahn Chah taught. Sometimes he taught in very simple ways about samadhi, concentration, and about wisdom. There may be people who think, well, I belong to the concentration side. I belong to the tranquility side. I belong to the wisdom, the insight side, which is better than calm, or calm is better than wisdom. He would then say that they go together. We lift up a knife with its handle. It has both the back and the edge. Oh, this is indeed true. Do you see? They go together. There's no need to separate them. It's not that one thing is better than another. They depend on each other. When we practice like that, knowing the breath, having mindfulness, our mindfulness becomes steady, becomes continuous, concentration becomes established, knowledge arises, and this is called wisdom. When wisdom arises, it arises from hearing and listening, it arises from thinking and mental fabrication, and it arises from real understanding. Therefore, sometimes he would tell monks and novices to put the books, the manuals, and texts into the cupboard, and not to take them out at all, and then to lock it. Look at the mind, look at our own mind, with mindfulness. Observe the mind. What is it thinking? What is it doing? Does the mind have greed? Does it have anger? Does it have delusion? By what means can we make the mind not greedy, not angry, not deluded? We then come to know it. We have to know and keep up with the moods and sense objects. If the mind is peaceful at a good level, with firmly established concentration, we will see that the mind is one thing, and the moods and sense objects are another thing. They are like oil and water. It's normal for them to separate from each other. We will be able to see that clearly in our own mind. We can distinguish them clearly. We must come to train ourselves to see it that way, if we can see it like this, it is called that we understand the path of practice. We understand the way of Dhamma practice, that we must practice it in this way so that the mind can be separated from its moods and sense objects. But every day, the mind and its moods, its objects, are all mixed together. We see everything as a self, as a person, so we must try to contemplate in this way constantly. Do we have desire? Sometimes Ajahn Chah taught about this very simply. He asked, is this hall big or small? If we want this hall to be bigger, then this hall is small, right? If we want a smaller hall, then this hall is big. It all lies in the mind's fabrication. Here we are told to look at the mind. Is this boundary marker stone or rock small or large? Is it heavy? If we go and lift it up, it is heavy right then. This is called a boundary marker. If we want it to be bigger than this, then it becomes small. Whether it is small or large depends on the mind that fabricates it. Therefore, we look at the mind. Craving arises at the mind that fabricates in this way. To see moderation, to see understanding, to see conventional designation more deeply, this can be called liberation, where there are no various conventional things. Like today, we come to sit and listen, and there is an us. There is a monk giving a talk. There are monks with this name and that name. These are conventional names. They are gathered together as elements. This mass of elements has a conventional name, called this monk or that monk. In truth, there is really nothing there. This is anatta, not self. If we contemplate and expand this understanding, we will see that it is not self. If one sees like this, knows like this, understands like this clearly, this is called seeing the Dhamma. Seeing the Dhamma, one sees the Dhamma of the Buddha. Seeing the Dhamma is seeing the Buddha. And then we see the Sangha. And we see the virtues of the great teachers even more deeply. We see that we have obtained the Dhamma, that we have come to understand the Dhamma about all the subjects of moral conduct, concentration, wisdom, and mindfulness. All of this is because we have cultivated and formed habits from the Dhamma that he taught. Each time, the defilements are abandoned, little by little, little by little, and then one is committed to the practice. This becomes a guiding path, teaching us to cultivate meditation, and we follow it. If we are practicing in seclusion, we follow the practice until our minds gradually improve. It requires time until our concentration becomes established, the body becomes light, the mind becomes light. Having sat in meditation, the mind gathers into concentration. It becomes still and silent. Everything disappears. It is emptiness. Concentration can take many forms, but just let us practice, and then we will see the benefits of concentration. Cultivating mindfulness, it becomes something that acts as a barrier that prevents the current of defilements from entering. This is within the Noble Eightfold Path, namely moral conduct, concentration, and wisdom. Practicing in this way is called giving our practice as true homage within our own heart. Coming together, coming to practice, coming to strive diligently, waking early at 3 a.m, chanting and performing morning and evening pujas, walking meditation, sitting meditation, being one who speaks little, sleeps little, eats little, and is truly committed to practice. Because we have set our intention to come this way, then we truly do it. And even though in this year the weather is colder than other years, but we endure, we train, we patiently persevere, we remain resolute, doing this every year. And after returning from the practice retreat and returning home, we continue to practice further as appropriate, according to our capacity, according to circumstances, according to time and occasion. Next year we come together again and we look at how in the past year, how has our practice been? How have we given our practice as homage to the Buddha, the Dhamma, the Sangha, and paid homage to Venerable Ajahn Chah? What additional gains have we obtained? Have greed, anger, and delusion become lighter? Have our views and conceit been reduced? And so we continue to train in this way. This is called our mind gaining understanding, entering into the principles of the Dhamma, according to the path that the Buddha intended, according to the path that the great teachers wished for us to have knowledge paired with noble virtues with. This is the highest thing and is a blessing of our life. So I anumodana, rejoice, and say sadhu to the monastic sangha and all the lay supporters, every one of you who have come together to give their practice in homage to the Venerable Ajahn Chah in this year 2026. May you all have prosperity, have strong and healthy bodies, and may you all grow in the Dhamma. May you grow in blessings.